Paul, are you muted? And if you're not, is that seagulls I hear in the background?
No, I'm not muted, and that's probably doves you hear in the background.
Something tropical.
Something, yeah, something invasive.
Except when we're...
Oh, maybe they didn't hear any of that.
Did everybody here start the meeting and hear the vision statement, or did that go out okay? We weren't sure here.
I heard nothing of that. None of that.
Okay. It turned out the system was on mute here. We thought we were talking to you all. So Vice Mayor will once again read the vision statement to get us started on our work session here.
We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate.
Muted again.
So that went across. Okay, so does everybody hear us now?
Yes.
Okay, sounds good. For our work session, we've got, I'll just give you a quick run through on what we've got to touch on tonight. If you're not looking at the whole agenda, and the agenda as we published it didn't have a few things on it. So the first thing we're going to start off with in a minute here is from Paul Berry with his council training slides for how the DRC operates. Another step in our series of making sure that we all are on the same sheet of music about what our departments do. And then we'll move into going through our general meetings draft agenda at this point. And we've got a few things we'll be adding to it. We'll talk about the Grandpa's Farm Bridge project that we're pleased to have apparently have a commitment from Fish and Wildlife Service to fund the whole thing for us. So we're going to add that to the agenda as a motion to approve us putting it out to bid with contingent on funding from Fish and Wildlife for the whole thing. So we'll go through the agenda. We'll be adding a living adjustment resolution to it that Tom will describe. You also have a scoping document that we'll be covering for a septage pumping and handling project. Talk about the Gustavus Community Center's opening that's coming up start of the summer. And we've been asked to which room we would like to name in honor of the contributions that they got from the endowment fund, which were something like more than $76,000, pretty substantial. And so we get the opportunity to have a room name for us, and we'll discuss which one of the several they're giving us on a list that we would like to maybe have named for the city or the city of Gustavus Endowment Fund. We'll review and the pandemic risk assessment that I've done, and if you've got any questions at the end about roads and what we're doing now, we can cover that. So that's kind of the plan for this evening, unless the clerk thinks of something that I forgot here. So first I'd like to start though with Paul Berry, DRC manager, and for his training slides on how the DRC runs and why it's so important to this city. Please proceed, Paul.
Okay, thank you, Mike. And if you guys have questions, please interrupt me, because once I get my lips flapping, I can just go and go and go. I've structured this slides more on priorities that I have in the coming fiscal year, but it really does touch on the operations in general. But if you have specific questions on something I didn't touch, then by all means, let me know. And so this is what I'm talking, and if I'm assuming that everybody can read the slides, so I'm not going to, you know, list everything, but this is kind of what is on the plate for the current council year and going into the next fiscal year is these 6 points. And one of those points is, you know, the two projects. So these are things that I will talk about tonight. So it's more than just our operation, but really it gives you a good idea of that. And then I'm also have my quarterly report to the council next week. So you get to hear a lot from me between the work session and the main session. And I've made the DRC operator position kind of front and center. I am planning on retiring at the end of, let's see, that will be FY24. So the beginning of FY25, whoever is my successor is the one taking it away. You know, so we kind of have established, you know, some time here. So there's time to plan. And as a planner, you know, I've invested a lot of my life in the recycling center. And so I would like to give it a good shot at going. But, you know, even the best intents, you know, you never know how it pans out. So we just kind of take it from there. But these points are kind of the, as I see it, benefits or things to kind of structure around. And it's one of the things, you know, because actually I kind of go into that, the first thing. And I remember when in the early days of the training, it was actually Mike Taylor, who was involved with giving me SWANA training, the Solid Waste Association of North America. And, you know, at first blush, I was like, wow, I know that. But actually the training really turned out to be one of the most important things in the, you know, the part of being, you know, the landfill manager, in that it gave me exposure to something outside of Gustavus. And that was real important. So this was actually my first training. This was at the Apex landfill, which is probably one of the country's largest landfills. It serves Las Vegas. And in the background there, you can kind of see those slopes because they're basically filling a canyon with this landfill, but it's very well run. And from that experience, I saw things that were similar to Gustavus and things that were different. And so really one of the emphasis on having the DRC operator position is it kind of creates a incentive for a training program that we wouldn't do with our temporary labor pool employees, that this is something that kind of, you know, it creates a more career aspect. And the training, you know, for me, it's composting and landfill stuff, but you could also have things, you could be training someone in welding, you could be, you know, training things that are going to be of benefit for the facility, kind of structured around the interests of the individual, but also the needs of the facility. And it's just, you know, training is really one of the important things that can come about by creating the operator position as opposed to simply maintaining the labor pool. And I've been so bold as to put the individual picture in there, and you know, we don't make determinations as far as who my successor is, but currently we have a really good opportunity because we have someone who's interested in the facility and, you know, is kind of getting a good feel for it, but also is of this community, so that, you know, we kind of, you know what you're getting into, which is similar to me. I was someone of the community, you know, so with Ian, as someone, you know, but again, we don't know, it's part of a process, but that's an important part of this, is having someone in mind, something in mind, you know, so you're kind of working in that direction and you're working into it together. So the next thing I wanted to get into is the important projects that are happening in the next fiscal year or calendar year. And these are the two of them. On the left, no, we the right, that would be replacing the Quonset. And that's really more than the replacing the Quonset. There's actually concrete work, which would be expanding it. I don't know if you can see my mouse, but I'm kind of circling on the right side between the concrete pad and the fence furthest to the right. And one of my goals in this project is to increase that concrete so it goes all the way to the fence and so that there are concrete blocks between the fence and what's in front so you can actually push against, you wouldn't be pushing against the fence, but you can push in that direction. And that's central in you know, collecting wood chips and collecting compost. You know, so there's some important improvements to the composting yard besides just replacing the Quonset. And then the other project, of course, is the designs for the new building. And so these are the slides for the new building project. The one on the left is kind of the overview as far as how that new building potentially fits in there relative to the existing building, including changes in traffic flow and how it would tie in to the outflow storage area, which is where we store our bales and where you would have bale pickup. Because currently when we're shipping out bales, there's basically a truck parked where it says new building right now. So that we'd have to change that a little bit so that when you're having your truck come in to collect bales, it would be going into that other thing. So that's kind of part of that planning. And then on the right of that is kind of a block diagram of the functionality of the building. Because this is kind of what I've learned in this process, you know, that no one bid on the RFP for new design is because they needed to know more prior to going into it. There's interest in the project from architects and engineers, but they need to know more. So kind of a schematic diagram of the building and then from there. So that diagram on the right is kind of a rough, you know, taking that 6,000 square feet that is the pink thing that says new building and what it is we're doing with it, you know, as far as where the public is sorting, where commercial businesses are sorting, where we're storing waste in between days of operation, and then where we have our equipment. And you notice there's a good distance between where the public is engaged and where the equipment is engaged. There's a good separation in that. But this will in essence be a classic transfer station architecture. And so this is that Quonset replacement, that drawing on the lower left is what Matt Davis came up. This was a little too expensive for our budget. And then I have a very rough drawing up on the upper right. So it's basically taking that bin thing and instead of making it out of poured concrete, as you notice on the sketch that has a bobcat, there's a series of blocks off to one side with a cistern behind it. I intend to use those blocks in the construction of the compost replacement or of the Quonset replacement because the blocks, it's going to be cheaper and it's going to be versatile. If you need to widen the bays, if you need to add a new bay, it just allows a bit more flexibility in how the composting yard will be set up as opposed to, you know, setting it in stone as far as those bins are going to be exactly that width. You know, this way there's, you know, if we change buckets or something, you can play with a little bit if there's something that's different about it. And it should be cheaper to construct. So I would send, you know, the drawings with the thing to the engineer and they would come out with a roof structure to go over it. It would be going for something much simpler than what we had in the other drawing. There wouldn't be any garage style doors. You know, it would be a shed roof, but it would be a much simpler design without, you know, the integrated air going through the floor and there wouldn't be any water system. It would just be a very basic concrete bay system with a shed roof over it. So hopefully that will allow that project to move forward by going with a much simpler design. The other thing I wanted to talk about is what I call the mound. That's where we place our wastes. And there are two important aspects of it. And that's kind of the two groups of the paragraphs there is how we work with the top soils, cover soils that we have, which are quite soft. And then also the bottom one is how we determine the rate of use and how we calculate how much life we have left in it. And what I've learned about landfills is that's really their business is selling that space that makes up their resultant waste mounds. And so that's really what we'd be doing in Gustavus as well. But you can see in that picture of the stuck loader that we are challenged in making sure that we can have access to the bale fill without getting stuck, because conditions in a lot of our year are wet and muddy. So this is kind of something that I'm working a lot with in terms of how to access the mound year round in a, you know, a good way, and then how to determine its usable life. And so the determination of the usable life of the mound has been diagrammed and illustrated quite well in the November 2021 landfill development plan that I'll briefly discuss in my quarterly report next week, but is also linked in my report so everybody can read it. It's on the DRC's website currently. But in that document, we are can see what our rate of use is, 250 cubic yards a year as of 2015, though 2019, it was probably closer to 300 cubic yards a year. And then also a calculation of just how many cubic yards we have left in the current mound. And then these proposed sites for expanding the mound. And I'll go into detail with that at a later point in time. But this kind of gives the council, the operator, and the community an idea of the capacity of the DRC in terms of how long we can use it and what we can expect to see, you know, at the end of it. And then that other diagram is just, you know, that's basically how you place it. And that's the resultant 3-to-1 side you have on it, where every foot you go up, you're going out 3 feet. So as long as your base is wide enough, you can, you know, that kind of gives you your rate of usage, and you do not take it to a conical point. You take it to a usable point. I think in the document we're talking about, I think it's 30 some feet from, it's not from ground level, but it's a point below that. It's sea level or something like that. But that's in the document itself. It's very professional, well-written. It's to give council members, public, and operators a good way of understanding the rate of use of the mound. Then the other thing I wanted to talk about in May, we're having the training that's provided by the Zender Group, who I work for, and is being done at the city. I mean, not at the city, but the DRC. I mean, the training itself will probably be offsite as far as this is a classroom in Anchorage. But this is typically what happens, you know, is you bring people in from villages across Alaska, and then you kind of go over topics. And one of the main topics we'll be covering during the training is food waste composting and bringing in professionals from Juneau and from Yakutat to go over composting operations and to share that information with interested parties in other parts of the state. We'll also be looking at the community garden. So how do you relate food waste composting in the community to food security, things like community gardens, how do you tie these things together? And then also be looking at the community chest, how you are involving thrift sales and stuff like that to help with the lifespan of your facility, but also help with funding, you know, just kind of have a fuller spectrum of, you know, the waste stream, the reuse stream, stuff like that. And then the other big event the following week in May is going to be a busy month, is the second biennial household hazardous waste collection event, where we collect household waste from the public for free on the Sunday. That'll be Sunday, May 15th, if these days all pan out. And then the commercial users on the 16th. So like the Park Service or any of the lodges that have material, you know, that's how you structure. So the public can bring in theirs. So I've contacted Clean Harbors, who's the same outfit that we worked with in 2018. They're gonna come back with me with a quote, and we're gonna start negotiating the user agreement as far as you know, how much the city is expecting to pay, how much material is expecting to be collected, who the points of contact are, and so on and so forth. So I think with the prior event behind us, I've got a very good understanding of how this works this time, things to watch out for, and things that worked really well. So that's kind of an important part of the what is happening in May. And then of course, budget planning. And I have proposed, and I want the council to think about a 5% rate increase. We have not had a rate increase since 2017. And the longer you go without a rate increase, the greater the spread between what the operation is costing and what the public's share of covering that cost is. And I know there are concerns with charging too much and having people shy away from use of it. You know, so that's kind of the beauty of our process. I propose these things, you know, it's up to the council to say yay or nay, because any cost increase is done in the form of a resolution. So it's a very front and center thing for the council to consider any rate increases for the DRC. And I mean, ideally this would be going into place in May or June if, you know, the rate increase is to be incorporated into the budget next year. But again, this is kind of a council decision. And then of course, budgeting for the new DRC operator position, I'm putting it in there. You know, we'll see where it goes. You know, I just put forward my best effort for the facility, and then we take it from there. And then that third point, increasing in the DRC equipment maintenance shop, as I've mentioned in my staff reports that in the end of October, let's see, no, it would be the end of November. There was a substantial failure of our newer Bobcat, the 770, our larger Bobcat. And Ian has spent 2 months working on this. He isolated the failure, extracted the broken parts, which were embedded deep in the bowels of the unit. I mean, it really took quite a bit to go that deep into it. And then replaced the seals. Since we didn't know which one went out, he replaced the ones for both halves. And then has gotten it back together and is now in the point of doing testing. But what came out of that was the need that the city needs to invest in more tools. And we're not talking an outrageous amount here. We're talking, you know, between $4,000 and $5,000 for purchasing things like impact drivers, open and closed wrenches, 6-point wrenches, 12-point wrenches. You know, it's basically a lot of hand tools and a good tool chest, you know, that kind of form the core of your maintenance shop. But the DRC is heavily reliant on equipment. I am not a mechanic. I've kind of, you know, kept things going as best I can. The city of Gustavus does not have a commercial shop that does equipment repairs. So we're kind of at the mercy of our own, you know, abilities and getting things to Juneau. So it's really important for the city to invest in the DRC's equipment maintenance capabilities, because that's, you know, what allows you to kind of keep things in repair and kind of keep things moving forward. So that's an important part of our the budget going forward. And then this is my last slide, but I just kind of, you know, the community chest is under the purview of the DRC, and there are maintenance tasks there. With the CARES Act, we were able to purchase a new front door that is an outswing door, which is, we were not supposed to have an inswing door. And, you know, it's kind of a long story as how we ended up with one, but this will have a panic bar and stuff like that. So that's putting the proper kind of exit door on the main building there and doing a repair of the lighting upstairs with kind of more flush LED lighting as opposed to the compact fluorescent lighting that protrude, which are not good in a confined attic space. You want something that's safe and tucked back. And then of course, as the summer progresses, I hope that we're able to do more painting of the exterior of the chest just to kind of help with its upkeep and appearance. So those slides kind of make up my thing. I'm gonna take away my share. And take any questions I might have from council members if there was something that I left out or anything.
Thank you, Paul. I'll have to say it's hard to imagine the DRC without you there. And we realize that's ultimately going to be the future. And I guess we'll have to do our best to finish these legacy projects that you've laid out for us before you bail on us. Do any council members have questions for Paul about his report and his plans for the DRC? Looks like Louis Sharman has his hand up. Louis, please.
Yeah, Paul and council members, I suspect this has been mentioned before, but I just really want to say that the way that Paul, you've been managing the integration of the DRC, the community chest and the community garden is just really, really smart planning. And I really appreciate that, the extent to which it all has to do with solid waste and incidentally with compost for the community garden and, you know, sort of in that regard is just really an intelligent approach. And I just want to commend you on that.
Yeah, thank you. And one thing I mentioned with people who are touring it is really a lot of what the DRC is about is resources, you know, because if people separate out resources, if they separate out food waste, it's no longer trash or garbage, it's actually a resource. And likewise with glass or likewise with paper products or steel products, you know, that it's really a place of resources and not so much a place of waste. I mean, there certainly is waste there, but resources is really what it's all about.
Okay, thanks. Do any other council members have a question for Paul? Been a very very good presentation. I appreciated seeing the slides and all. Any of the rest of you have something? Okay, well, Paul, I hope you still have the sunset ahead to enjoy there from the Lanai, and thanks for checking in and while you're away and giving us this presentation.
Yeah, and thank you for the opportunity. Thank you.
We'll look forward to seeing you back here in Gustavus at the DRC. Okay, so the next thing would be to go to our agenda for our draft agenda for the general meeting. See if we can get that pulled up here. Okay. So, and I might dad be nice to have more council members in the, if you feel up to it in during the general meeting here in the council room. It's nice to be able to see everybody across the table that can make it in. So we've got a couple of sets of minutes for you to review, and I hope you'll get through them. I looked at them. I don't recall. I didn't find anything that didn't seem right up to as I recalled it. So they look good to me, but I hope the rest of you look it over and be ready to approve those items. We'll have a report from the Visitors Association with their business plan and budget request, and that's in the packet already. They've been getting a lot of stuff done, and there's information about the changes they've made on their websites, which sound really interesting. And I took a look at it today. So do take a look at that report. We have a PFAS Action Coalition quarterly report, which is also already in the packet. And there have been some interesting developments with them in that they've got the report back on the flux sampling that they've done. And it's pretty interesting to check out, and they're making progress towards some recommendations about whether and how to apply the plume stop technology here in Gustavus. They also sent out to you a link to Kristen Freiberger's report. She's the project manager with Shannon Wilson of Fairbanks, has been working on this project and also on the Fairbanks Airport plume stop project. And I found it very interesting to watch. She had some great discussion, both of Fairbanks and Gustavus, in that report. So I learned some good stuff from it, and I hope you'll take time to look through that report that Kelly sent out to us all. Paul give his quarterly report. As he mentioned, we'll have the monthly financials, as we always do, and Tom will be giving a report. And Tom has, we've got him on the agenda right now for a work session report. So Tom, if you're ready with your comments, we'd be glad to hear from you now about that.
Actually, Mayor Taylor, I just wanted to make sure you mentioned that before, earlier in the agenda, after roll call and the vision statement, we've got a presentation from the public health nurse, Claire Geldhoff, on the Healthy You in 22.
Great. We'll look forward to having a presentation from the public health nurse. I had asked her if she could speak to us with a focus on the new program from the Department of Health called Healthy You in 22. And it's more than just pandemic stuff. It's all kinds of things about being healthy. And they are emphasizing during the first quarter physical fitness and getting outside and being active as really a key element for health and longevity. So that's, I think, the first quarter's emphasis, and they'll have other coverage on mental health and other issues throughout the year. So I'm looking forward to hearing from Claire, our public health nurse, about how we can make use of that, of the materials that are being presented, made available by the Department of Health, that we could share in our community and encourage healthy activities and healthy lifestyles for everybody here. So yeah, thank you, Madam Clerk, for reminding me of that. We'll have that added into the agenda, and I'll probably try to put her on first thing or as early as possible. So yeah, okay, great. Yeah. Okay, we'll have Tom then, I guess, if you'd like to speak to us now with your work session report, we could we'd be delighted to hear.
Thank you, Mayor, and good evening, everybody. Our CARES Act grant, that was our first lump of payments from the federal government for the pandemic, closed out. The state recognized that we had closed all of our expenditures, and all of our funds that we received had been expended. So a big shout out to our treasurers, Phoebe Vanslow and Eduardo Loggins, for all the hard work keeping our grant programs funded and our accounting accurate. The mayor and I have been working on our funding reimbursements from the December 2020 flood. We have multiple projects that are getting close to completion. We've been approved for about $36,000 for our debris removal project. And after our meeting with them today, we're probably within a week or 10 days of getting another project funded and submitted for payment. There's a couple more that are following those projects, and they're moving along quickly. A couple of these projects are going to linger into the spring, summer, because the work on them will require the snow to be gone and the ground to be pliable enough to work on. But we are making progress, and the mayor has been doing a lot of work in providing information to FEMA. He was on site for a lot of these repair projects and has been very helpful in getting the information to them so that they'll have a good idea of what the projects mean as they see the numbers and the narratives. Budget development. Staff has given the mayor a rough draft of the budget. He's made some changes in input. So we're ready to start our council member one-on-one sessions. We're hoping to do that next week. If you're interested in sitting down with the treasurer and myself to go over line by line through the budget, we'd be happy to have you. Just give a contact to the clerk or myself and we'll get you scheduled up. If you're not available on normal city hall hours, just let me know what works for you and we'll make accommodations. You can either do it over Zoom or in person. I recommend in person because we're able to put the budget up on the large monitor and then walk through the line by line items. I'm pretty good about picking up cues if somebody looks confused or maybe not understanding the language we're using. So in person allows me to be able to see face to face and also get more in depth with some of the topics if there are any confusions or other problems with interpreting the line item descriptions. The rest of the schedule for the budget development is we'll finish up one-on-ones next week. And then on February 28th, we'll do a budget work session. This will take place instead of the council training that the mayor and I was going to put forward because we're trying to get as much lead time in the budget feedback process, thought that the budget would be a higher priority than the council training. We're looking to then have a budget town hall for the public on Wednesday the 16th. We're hoping to introduce the budget at the April general meeting or the May general meeting, depending if there's a need for modification. After we do the town hall, depending on the input that we get from the public, the council could decide it wants to hold another work session, and we'll fit that in as needed. I had a couple late additions to my report that came in after our deadline. I'm happy to announce that the library is a recipient of two additional grants. They both support outreach to our young patrons through the literacy and the East, and that's the environmental science, technology, engineering, and math. The first grant is the Leap into Science grant from the Alaskan After School STEM Expansion VISTA program. It's for the out of the Children's Trust. Throughout the last several months, a bi-monthly training on the topics of shadows, wind, and balance take place. The grant also includes books and hands-on materials for each topic. Our wonderful librarians, Jesse Soder and Leanne Winkle, are currently offering the K through fifth grade patrons 4 fun day Fridays of the E-STEM in literacy after school. The second grant is the University of Alaska Museum of the North Education and Public Programs. The Gustavus Public Library was selected to receive an excellent Sun Discovery kit, and it's filled with literacy and hands-on materials for use in future programming. So great job to Jesse and Leanne for getting those grants. Now that's all I have to present, Mayor, unless there's some questions.
Thank you, Tom. Any questions for Tom on these items that he's presented from council members? Not seeing any hands coming up on my screen. I would like to emphasize the value of coming in and spending some time with Tom and the treasurer to understand the budget. There's no single item we do all year that's more important than doing our budget properly and the integrity of our government and our is based in or is fundamental in our handling of the public's funds. This is public money we're using, and we got to make the best use of it to generate value for the public and be responsible in how we do it. So understanding the budget is really worth our time to come in and get familiar with it. It'll make it a lot easier when we go through it in work sessions and in the general meetings. So, okay, well, thank you very much, Tom. And Tom, thank you also for all your hard work on the FEMA funding applications. I'll tell you, folks, I could never have done it without Tom. And he's got the details down. I think he's memorized every one of those invoices line by line. So when FEMA's got a question, he's got an answer for him. So thanks a lot, Tom. Next item on the agenda for the general meeting will be a certificate of records destruction. You've got that in the packet. It's pretty routine. The clerk says she may have an extra item or two, I think, to add to that, if I understand right. So it looks slightly different as it appears on the agenda that comes out next Wednesday in advance of our meeting. We've got an item to waive an ambulance transport fee due to a billing error. That's in the packet, so I don't need to really go over that. It's pretty minor. Just a mistake that we made in billing something that didn't need to be billed. But we have a process where the council waives fees if we have billed it and then we're not expecting or needing to receive it. So that's in the packet. Take a look at that. We'll have gravel pit contract. Oh, just a minute, please. Yes. Aha, Lewis. Yes, sorry. The clerk just brought to my attention that your hand was up.
No worries. I just wanted to ask a quick question about the records destruction thing. And I'm new on the council. I really don't know how this thing works, but it seems like we have an item to essentially do that every month. And that's fine if that's the way we're supposed to do it. But I also wonder whether if that frequency of timeliness is not terribly necessary, we might not have to do it quite as often. So I guess that's a question for the clerk maybe is, yeah.
Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Councilmember Lewis. So we have a records destruction schedule that tells, like you'll notice in the first column, it's separated by different series and categories. And there's dates on when those items, how long, it tells us how long we retain those documents and when they should be destroyed and how they should be destroyed. So this is what you're seeing here is kind of a backlog of things that should have been destroyed many years ago. And the reason why you see this item so frequently on the agenda now is because this is my slower time of year where I can kind of catch up on a backlog of records. And it's a project that I've been working on since I started. So you'll probably see more of these as time allows me to go through records.
Okay, yeah, thanks. That makes total sense. We got this huge backlog, so we're chipping away at it. So yeah, that makes sense. Thanks, Karen.
Yeah, and you'll notice that we've got a resolution on the agenda coming up that where we update the policy and procedure for records maintenance. And that's an opportunity. It was an opportunity for me today to go through that policy and procedure, and it reminded me of how detailed that process is. So it's all laid out in that policy and procedure that will be item 11 on the agenda coming up on Monday night. But something to be pay attention to. I spent a little time studying and get familiar with it. You don't have to memorize the table at the end, but at least get a feel for what's involved in it. We'll have an award of gravel pit contracts, and maybe I can call on Tom again here now to give us a description of that, because he's more up scale of that award than I am. Tom, is that something you could discuss for a sec?
Sure. Thank you, Mayor. So every year, the city puts out solicitation for our gravel pits. We have three ponds out there that someone could lease from us for use for projects. Typically, they're our contractors. We know are these folks. They've been the same lessees for at least the last 4 years, if not more. We did make an adjustment on the cost of gravel. I think it was in 2019, where we raised the cubic yard cost to $6. And that money goes into our roads and our gravel pit funds, so that we are able to make the necessary improvements similar to our repair and replace fund that we have for the departments. So we put out the solicitation, and then and it closes on Monday, a week from today, and then the council will if we have more than the three that we typically have, we'll select the recipients of the lease based on the responses. And if we do get our regular three, then it's a fairly simple process of assigning the ponds to them. These contractors put investment into these ponds, helping themselves to be able to access the gravel and then be able to use that for servicing the community. Anything that you can think of I'm leaving out, Mayor?
No, I think that described it pretty well. Does anybody have any questions on that item? Okay, good. Yeah, that one's pretty straightforward. We do it every year. I'm trying to read my small screen here. The next one will be updating. We mentioned earlier the resolution updating our policy and procedure for public records maintenance. So again, take a look at that. Does anybody have any questions about that at this point? And if you could also call the clerk during the week, if you had any questions about that policy. The resolution is short, but the policy and procedure is long. Fortunately, we don't have to read the policy and procedure, just the resolution in the meeting. So we're okay on that. Okay. Let's see. The next thing on the list after that, item 12, is CRM review. the clerk put that on there for us provisionally, and I've included in the packet the update. Actually, I think we've got the old CRNA, the one that's now, and then our post update that we rewrote at the direction of the council from a couple of years ago. And it's been a long process working with DNR on this thing. They did this last fall, Bruce Weirach was working for DNR. Some of you may recall he was a state legislator and has been a lawyer in Alaska for quite a long time. And so he put in a little bit of time working for DNR before he retired at the end of, I think, November. And he really did some wonderful rewrite on the first section of that that DNR had to write, and has made it, his legal training and experience really shows through and made for a better CRMA than DNR originally wrote. You know? So at any rate, there's the basic CRMA at the first, and then, and it's kind of hard to scan all the way through this thing, but you can look at it in your packet. And then there's a development plan that we largely wrote, was in here in Gustavus, and then we updated it this time around to reflect some updated history and other things like that, and clarify some things like the fact that the city would have jurisdiction and authority to apply its code of ordinances in managing the beach park and so forth. So, but at any rate, the Southeast office here has recommended to their headquarters, which are up in Anchorage, that this is what they would like to go forward with, this revision as it appears now. The office up in Anchorage is still reviewing it, and there was some question about whether they might like it sometime in the future to go to a special use agreement with us rather than a CRMA like they've always had. That was potentially kind of a wrench thrown into the works if they wanted to change that now. We think they will agree to for us to adopt the CRMA, and then if they want to develop a special use area arrangement for the beach park with us, then we'd be happy to work with them in the future on that. But they have not yet given the Southeast Regional Office here their final approval for us to put it out for public comment and so forth. So I anticipate we will not have this on the agenda for discussion next Monday, but I did want you to have the CRMA so that you could be looking it over and get kind of familiar with what we're doing here and what, how it's written and provisioned and so forth. So, and we'll also have to get approval before it's all signed off by the DeBoer family, because they have the covenants that cover the beach park tracks. So they're on board with these two. We've been in touch with them all along. So there are a few steps like that that will have to be done, but our hope is to have the updated CRMA in place before we move into the summer busy season for the beach park. Okay, so any questions on that item before I move on? I hope you'll spend a little bit of time on that and get familiar with it. We put a lot of time in on it. It's pretty important for the community here. Okay. The rest of the general meeting agenda is just the usual council comments, questions, public comment, et cetera. So did I miss something? Clerk's giving me some direction here and I'm not hearing it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I had that on my list to discuss going down after this, but we'll have some additional items on it to the cost of living resolution that Tom's worked up, and that's our annual adjustment based that we follow a policy and procedure with a formula whereby we calculate the change in the consumer product or price index for Anchorage, and we adjust pay rates here for regular employees by per that calculation. And it turns out that the inflation on the increase in the price in the consumer price index for Alaska for Anchorage has been 4.9% this year. So there's a resolution that will apply that, and then we will that will be part of our budgeting process this spring as we do our operating budget. Another item on here that'll be added to the agenda is the Grandpa's Farm Road Bridge approval to put out an invitation to bid for that. And I've been working with the contact with the Fish and Wildlife Service about resurrecting this project. Many of you may remember that we had it designed about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was at that time scheduled for funding by the Fish and Wildlife Service, and then they lost the funding for that project at the time. So we worked with them in the last few months to see if we could resurrect it, and we updated the cost estimate and all of that to go with our application. We also were applying to the Forest Service's Icy Strait or Lynn Canal Icy Strait Regional Advisory Council grant for it too. So it was kind of a project where we were trying to find any possible funding for it. Well, I was delighted to have a call from our contact at Fish and Wildlife Service Friday afternoon saying that the regional office here has chosen our project for funding. There was kind of a catch was that we would have to be able to construct it this summer. They have the money and they want to see that it gets put to use. And the president is interested in making sure that the infrastructure projects are actually getting done. So they were looking for a shovel-ready project that they could fund, and they liked ours for the fish passage benefits for Harry Hall Creek and the Mountain View Stream that are upstream of that site. So they're off. It looks like we will have full funding of that project with no required local match. And the engineer's estimate on that bridge went up quite a bit since 5 years ago when we first had it designed, and it's now something like, well, over $400,000. And this was a deal that we just couldn't pass up. It's going to give us a nice bridge in a location where eventually that culvert and the embankment around it is going to be increasingly problematic. The culvert is perched already, so the bridge will make a much safer crossing there with curbs and all that. So it'll look like the bridge on Tong Road or the bridge on Good River Road, except unlike the bridge on Good River Road that is skewed because it goes across the stream at an angle, this one will be a rectangle. So it's 60 feet long by 18 feet wide with curbs. So it'll be a nice bridge. So I am completing the invitation for bid documents now. We have the design all done, as I mentioned. So I just, because it's a very large project, we do it with the invitation to bid format, which is about 91 pages in this case, because it has all of the contract boilerplate that you have to have for a large project in case anything goes wrong. And it also meets the requirements for federal funding. So I'm working my way through that, and I would like to put it out to bid after the next general meeting this next week. For a project this size, we ask the council's approval before we put it out to bid. And the award of the project would be pending, would require that we have an ironclad commitment from Fish and Wildlife Service to fund it. So that means we have to have something in writing from them saying, yes, we're going to be able to spend their money on this. So it's not going to cost the city anything. The award would be predicated on that confirmation. But if we can award it say early March, we would do the actual award at the March general meeting, give them a notice to proceed a few days after that, after we get all submittals in. And the manufacturer of the timber bridges in Tualatin Tualatin, Oregon, said they would be able to get the bridge package to us within 3 to 4 months after they get the notice to proceed with the design. So the bridge design is, the bridge itself, that package is designed by the manufacturer. So we should be able to be constructing that by midsummer, you know, on schedule, and it'll be a great project if we can get it done. So I'll be asking you for a motion of approval for putting it out to bid at the general meeting. So that'll be an addition you'll see. We'll have the scoping document for the septage project that Tom has mentioned. And there's information in the packet on that. Tom, did you want to say anything more about that at this point?
Thanks, Mayor. I'll make a quick statement about the scoping and development document. For those who don't know what that is, it's a document required to fund a project. If it's approved, it will initiate the transfer of funds from the AMLET CIP account into our checking account. If it's approved, the next steps would be for this project to draft an ordinance to provide authority for that service. There's no department in the code that is listed for providing septic services. There's nothing in the code that suggests that Gustavus is going to fund or provide septic services. So we're going to need to put something into our code that gives us the authority to provide this service. And I'm suggesting that we use chapter 6.03, which is the waste disposal and recycling chapter. Once we do that, we'll also need to select the tank site. We're proposing that it be next to the DRC near the ramp at the Salmon River Harbor. And then through a RFQ, we'll identify an operator. Doing this step before purchasing equipment allows us to ensure that the equipment is compatible with the operator's equipment. For example, if they're using a truck, we make sure that the pump that we would purchase would fit in either the bed or a flatbed of the vehicle. Also, getting input from the operator could assist us in developing a better program. For example, the concept is for the resident or business to pay for the transporting of the wastewater with the pumping, and the operator would then conduct the transaction with Sea Level Transport, the lightweight that will take it from Gustavus to Juneau, and then Juneau Septic would pump it there and take it to CBJ, City and Borough of Juneau's wastewater facility. The transport is a fixed price, that's 90 cents a gallon. And the pumping rate would be something we would establish through the RFQ process. The RFQ would ask, you know, what the pumping rate would be, if it's a flat rate, per gallon rate, whatever the operator is going to propose. That way they are able to cover their costs, make a profit, and still we ensure that it isn't a cost so high that it's not a feasible option. The last thing we would do is put out bids for the equipment for anything that's over $10,000. That's kind of a summary of what the scoping document is for and what it says. And then I did receive some information today from Council Member Van der Zanden. It's about a 2002 study. The study, we hope, lives at the library. And if so, I'll pull a copy of that and look to see what it says. I see there's some questions. Councilmember Sharman.
Thanks, Tom. Just a quick question. I wanted to be sure that we have reasonable confidence that there won't be any surprises with respect to transport between here and Juneau. I know that at one point there was an issue with the ferry declining to carry the truck for a period of time. I'm assuming that you've sort of looked at that and determined that that's not going to be an issue, or with the lightweight either way, but that would be a rude surprise if we went all this way and then found that nobody was willing to accept the liability to transport to Juneau. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Councilmember Sharman. That's a good point. As I've discussed, the concept development was initiated in talking with our local contractors, Juneau Septic, and also Paul Wenzel of the Sea Level Transport. He was the one that actually suggested using the lightweight to transport the portable holding tanks. He also provided this service back before the ferry was operating, and it was a similar model to what we're proposing here. There was a storage tank next to the harbor, and then we would pump here, deliver it to that storage tank, and then he would pump to a tank on the lightweight and take it to Juneau. He has stated a commitment that he would be the willing to transport to Juneau. It makes sense for him financially because it would be something he could carry on his way back from stopping here in Gustavus, which is usually his return trip from Sitka. So it makes financial sense for him. We could also use the ferry, but the transporting on the ferry is more complicated, and using the lightweight. I discussed this with DEC and they said that that wouldn't be a problem for them. Apparently the lightweight also does this for other communities in rural areas that have the same types of problems that we do. So I share your concerns. I don't anticipate any surprises based on the conversations I've had with the lightweight, and I'm relying on his information in this aspect of the proposal. But thank you for bringing that up. Councilmember Lewis.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just want to be sure that, so we're talking about funding this outside of the funding cycle. Like we're not talking about, I guess my question is, would this be in the approval as part of the 2023 fiscal year budget, or is this completely separate?
So this is separate. It's kind of a capital project more than it is a line item in the general budget. The expense to the city will be purchasing some equipment. It wouldn't be for providing the service itself. So we wouldn't be doing a normal budget process. This would be a capital process where we purchase equipment for renovation of a building, culverts for roads improvements, those kind of things. So yes, this is outside. It's, okay. As you can see in the document, it's about $100,000 worth of equipment if we purchase the items as described.
What about long-term costs? What about maintenance and who actually is doing the pumping? Are we going to, is this going to increase, you know, Ben's duties or Karen's duties, or what's the long-term outlook on this?
So the proposal is that we would go outside with a RFQ and get a third party doing a public-private partnership. Third party would be the operator. It would be on a 1 year contract, which could be renewable. The equipment would belong to the city, primarily the trailer and the vacuum pump. And then it would be transferable from one business to another. Just as an example, say Fairweather Construction had the contract after the first year. Maybe their truck broke down or they weren't interested in providing the service the following year. We would then be able to provide the equipment for, let's say, Glacier Bay Construction. They carry the contract for a year, renew it. Maybe 5 years from now, they're no longer interested in it. It goes back out to bid. Maybe Gustavia Construction picks it up. Or maybe there's a third party out there that has an entrepreneurial spirit and wants to take this project on. Their pumping fee will have to be some amount that gives them the financial incentive to do the service. And in talking with our local contractors, in coming up with an approach, it seemed that there would be folks that would be interested in doing this if the equipment was available to them. So we won't really know until we go out with an RFQ and see what kind of response we get. That's why we're going to do the RFQ process before we do any purchasing. In terms of additional work for staff, we'll have to do site preparation for the tank site pads where the portable tanks would sit. After that, there shouldn't be any staff involvement. The removal of the tanks will be done by the lightweight. They'll use their equipment to load and offload the tanks. Scheduling will be done through the operator. It won't be done through staff. I don't anticipate there be any input or costs from the city once the project has been delivered to a third party so that it would be a business operating the service.
Okay, thank you for that. And we do know that there are people in town who want, or I guess we'd find out in the RFQ. I would really like to hear what people of Gustavus think about this. It seems like a big a new direction that we haven't gone as a city. And I know, you know, some people love it and some people might not think we have any reason to just be buying equipment for another company to make money off of, or maybe not see that this might be our, not be our role. So I was just trying to think if there's any way to tie this into the budget, the city budget review and the town hall. For me, it's going to be really important to hear from people, you know, whether there's a lot of support for this or not. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Councilmember Lewis. Just a couple of clarifications. It is something that has been done before. Like I mentioned, we did have this type of a service prior to the ferry. Second, the equipment would not be purchased for a contractor. It would be city equipment. We would own it. And then we would allow the third party to use it. So it wouldn't be going to a private entity, it would still belong to the city. The third on the timing, so the budget process as it's being proposed would go through town hall and then adoption and would go into effect July 1st. The septic cycle, the pumping cycle, we have approximately 10 folks that were on last year's list that did not get pumped. And according to Juno Septic, there's a list already for this coming year. I'm not sure how desperate folks are to get pumped. I know that we've had a couple of incidences in 2021 that I would like to see us avoid, some unsustainable pumping approaches. If we get too far down the road, by the time we're able to do the RFQs, get the purchase of the equipment and get it running, we'll have gone well into the summer and trying to avoid a repeat of the situation where we've already experienced. There is a public process that the general meeting people can make comments. We've received a few letters in support of the project. So I suppose if the council wants to roll it into the budget process, we can do that. I see Council Member Vanderzand intends up to.
I was talking to John Barry about the other report from 2002. I think that really bears looking into because that gave different options of how this could all be dealt with in Gustavus. And he stated he would be glad to help with that. He has an interest in it. I think this other the project, as you've laid it out here, is probably doable, but there's an awful lot of bugs in that that need to be worked out ahead of time. Things that could go wrong in Juneau and make us not even able to ship there. I did talk with Paul Welson, and he did confirm that 90 cents per gallon, and that's round trip, and that includes Juneau Septic, as long as everything keeps going way it, we hope it would, but there's just a lot of specs on tanks and what Juneau Septic wants, whether or not we need to spend a bunch of money on 8 of these tanks when 4 of them might get us by and help us to iron out some problems in the meantime. But anyway, I'm kind of looking forward to see what that survey from 2002 had to say. He gave the table of contents there in your email, but it's about a half inch thick, he said, so there's a lot to look at. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. I appreciate you forwarding that to me. I'll go to the library and see if we have a copy of it. He did state that if the library doesn't have that study, he would provide us a copy of his so that we could look it over. Again, this is an effort to get it out there and try to find some solutions. I had calls that were asking about a pumping schedule, and that's what generated, this whole program. I'm sure there's bugs and things that I haven't been able to identify, but I think this is why we start early and try to get time in so that we can make adjustments as needed and then still be able to provide the service as soon as the snow goes away. Yeah, did you have something to add, Joe?
Yes, just one other item I wanted to throw out there. I know that you're looking at a gallon tank on a trailer, and all the ones I've seen have the pump on the trailer with the tank, not a slide-in unit in a pickup. But I just wondered if that's going to work out very well. If you, that's somewhere around 10,000 pounds two axles that, you know, might be driven across people's yards in a rainy season, and that might not be very doable. So there's a lot of different things that need to be looked at, and I'll shut up now.
No, thanks, Joe. It's a good point. My thought was, if the Juno septic big old truck can get to a septic tank, then this approach should work even better. But certainly, you know, conditions are going to differ at every property. And, you know, I'm not in the septic business, but so I don't really know how to address it. That's why I asked, you know, Elm and Justin for their input and put together, you know, something that I thought would be hopefully at least something we could get started with. It's cheaper than the dewatering truck approach, but maybe not as effective. So I guess we'll just keep going and see where it takes us. Again, thanks for all the information on that, Joe. I appreciate it. Any Thank you, Mayor. Questions? I don't see any other hands.
Yeah, I was glad that Councilmember Lewis raised the issues or pointed out the importance of looking at this very carefully, because it is in fact a new city function. Yeah, this process has been done in the past, but not by the city. And we are pretty careful and cautious about adding the authority to take on new functions in the city. So it takes we really have to think about it carefully, be sure the public is behind us on this. But I think the growing number of residences here and businesses, the city even has a few septic tanks and two vault toilets at the beach in the park here that need to be pumped from time to time. So there's a lot of need for pumping septic tanks here. And we need a way to do it so that people aren't just discharging it who knows where, into their yard or some other unoccupied lot or something like that. So it is a real problem, and this is a possible solution. What Tom has brought forward here is the scoping document, which is the initial authority to begin working the project. It's not the final design. There's a lot that we could be thinking about and getting more information on, and tweak the process if opportunities suggest. I would think that the equipment might also be something that we could file for an infrastructure grant for. So we should be looking at opportunities like that. And if the city finances this purchase of the truck, then we might want to include expect some return every time it pumps a tank. So the RFQ, or perhaps an RFP, request for proposal, whatever we use to select a contractor service, could include a fee that comes back to the city to provide some return on the truck. We'd have to make sure that we have funding covering maintenance requirements and so forth on the truck. So the city would have some expenses there, even if it's operated by an outside operator, and that operator is billing the owners of the septic tanks as they're pumped. The city will presumably have some continuing cost on this. Insurance is another thing for that truck. So there's a lot to think about here. And so I urge you to spend some time getting familiar with the proposal and be ready to make suggestions if you've got ideas for improving on it. The council will have to approve it as a project for Tom to proceed working. And then I hope everybody will stay tuned into it to make sure that we capture all the possible opportunities for it. Why don't we take a 5-minute break at this point, and then after that, I've got the GCA item on the naming of the room for the city of Gustavus, et cetera, the pandemic and the pandemic risk assessment, and then any questions you might have on the road. So let's take 5 minutes now and then come back and finish up the agenda. Okay, everybody, I think we've had about 5 minutes. Thanks for the break. Need that glass of water there. So the next item on our work session agenda here is with regard to the Gustavus Community Center. They're having their grand opening coming up. Big whoop-de-doo, I think in May. I've forgotten the exact date. But in advance of that, they are going to be putting up a plaque to list major donors to acknowledge the donors that have made that possible. And the city of Gustavus donations through the endowment fund over the years totaled over $76,000. So we're fairly substantial in the construction of that facility. And I had an email from Meadowbrook offering or asking first how we would like to be indicated on the plaque, like such as the City of Gustavus or the City of Gustavus Endowment Fund. And it seems probably that City of Gustavus Endowment Fund might be the best, but I'd like to hear from you on that. And then there are 8 different rooms that they are naming for major donors. And she asked us what rooms we might like to have our name on. And I imagine there'll be, you know, maybe some competition among the various donors. So they may have to, we may not get our first choice. I don't, you know, but we'd be honored, I'm sure, to have the endowment fund or the city of Gustavus, you know, a room name, maybe just simply for the city of Gustavus. So the options are the kitchen, the main hall, the fitness center, the foyer / art gallery, that's the entry where they're going to have the artwork, conference room, the office, the back porch, and the hallway. So I need some input from you guys about what you would like me to suggest and what the first, second, maybe third choices might be among those. So who's got some ideas? That's again, kitchen, main hall, fitness center, foyer, art gallery. That's one piece there. The conference room, office, back porch, or hallway. Louis Sharman.
Ellie is shouting down from upstairs. She's going foyer. And I think the reason for that is, you know, it's the entryway to what is going to be at least perceived as the central building for community events in Gustavus, whether it's owned by the city or not. It also includes the big mural that the reality, of course, is that it was created by the citizens of Gustavus, and it just seems to me like a kind of a neat way to introduce everyone when they come into this big building that. One of the first things they might want to consider is the city as one of the funders. Actually, I would recommend that we consider identifying in the naming not the city per se, but the endowment. So there's my comment. Thanks.
I'll have to say that was my first thought too. So it's the foyer and art gallery area is a very prominent entry spot, and I would be very proud if our name was there, but I'm sure there'll be others that want to choose that too. Any other ideas? If that would that be your first choice? And if so, do you have a second choice for other other rooms? I'm not seeing names come up here, but am I getting them all here? Let me look. Let's see. My list back up. Does everybody like the foyer as the as our first choice? Vice Mayor is nodding his head over here next to me. Madam Clerk, what do you think? We'll give you a vote too here. She doesn't have a preference. Yeah, so as a fitness center, maybe for you, an active person. Okay, well, I can certainly ask for the art foyer art gallery. I would like to give them maybe a second choice or something. Conference room. Yeah, we might, who knows, we might be having city facilities and or city, some city events over there in the conference room. So that might be a good one for a second. I didn't hear you on that. Oh yeah, that's probably where the vet's operating, right? That little room on the right. Yeah, that'd be a possibility. Yeah, we're not the biggest donor. So, you know, that's why we're, so probably the main hall and the, you know, I'm sure the Rasmussen's gonna want the office, right? So a hallway or something. Okay, well, I can offer or ask for those two. And then if for some reason we're getting beat out by bigger donors, then, we'll suggest something else, I guess. But and do you like the idea of it being the Gustavus Endowment Fund, maybe? Or do you want City of Gustavus Endowment Fund? What are you guys thinking? I wish you were all sitting around the table here with me, so it would be a lot easier. I don't see any hands coming up.
I think Gustavus Endowment Fund seems appropriate.
Okay. Vice Mayor says Gustavus Endowment Fund. Yeah, that's that fund represents, you know, it's in a way a fund that's owned by the community. It's public money, and strictly speaking, it's the city's money, but it has been, we've considered it a community fund. And so maybe that, so Gustavus Endowment Fund sounds like a good way to do it. Well, if none of you have any objections, that's what I will suggest to Meadow. I promise to get back to her right after this meeting, so, or by tomorrow or so. So I'll do that. And thanks. Okay. The next item is the pandemic risk assessment. When we did resolution CY22-01 last month, we set forth requirements for mask wearing indoors in city offices, and the mayor is required by that resolution to make a report to the council monthly on a risk assessment as relates to our facilities and that resolution. So I wrote up a risk assessment and we've sent it out to you this morning. I hope you've had a chance to look it over. the nub on it is that the pandemic risks remain high in the state. The alert level, at least, is high for the whole state, including our census area. But the good news is that the case numbers appear to have peaked early in January and or actually slightly before that, and are heading down. The R sub T factor, that measures the, I'm having trouble thinking of the word here. It's the transmission factor that determines, how many people an infected person likely infects at that stage of the pandemic. And when it's one, that means one person who's infected transmits it on average to one other person. And so that keeps the pandemic just at the same level, the caseload at the same level. If the transmission factor is above one, then the curve is upward. If it is below one, it is downward. And when we passed this resolution, it was very high. On the 3rd of January, that transmission factor peaked at something like 1.78. But it has been in sharp decline since then. So that's good news. And now it is down to, what did I say in that? Something like 0.72. So that's a good trend. And the trend in the UK has been to peak and it's coming down. Many other locations around the world, South Africa peaked early. That's where it seems to have started, the Omicron variant. And Alaska was on the way up until early in January, and then the case numbers began to come down. We are still getting quite a few fatalities, but fatalities are a lagging indicator, especially considering that it takes a while sometimes for death certificates to be reviewed and the statistics to be posted. Sadly, last week, the state identified that there were the first two pediatric deaths of Alaskans, two children under one who died. But that was earlier, that was before the turn of the first of the year sometime. And they are the only two cases that have occurred among Alaskans under 20. We're still getting a lot of cases of people in their 40s, 50s, and largely in areas like Matsu and so forth, where there are lower rates of vaccination and mask wearing. So the alert level remains high. Juneau has a new resolution that requires mask wearing, not just in their facilities, but everywhere in public, indoors in public spaces. And they have a table that you might take a look at. I gave you the link in my report there that shows how they would adjust their requirements for various things like mask wearing, social distancing, capacity of restaurants and so forth at various levels of risk. And they use slightly different or a more finely divided risk schedule than does the state. So they have a very detailed thing there, but they are at a moderately high risk level now. And that under that level, they continue to require masks. They actually put it in their ordinance. But they are like us, they are monitoring the conditions of the pandemic and are prepared to adjust their requirements accordingly. So you will notice if you got to the end of my risk assessment that I did recommend that for now we maintain the mask wearing requirement in city buildings as set forth in our resolution of last month, and that we continue the process of doing a risk assessment and reevaluating monthly. And I am I am frankly hopeful that the alert levels will drop over the next month, and we may be looking at some opportunity to relax our requirements, which would require the council to change the or the resolution accordingly. So for now, my recommendation is stick with our plan and hope for the continuing decline of cases in the state and risk for our community. Do any of you have any questions on this? I know there's been a lot of concern about it. And Louis Sharman.
Yeah, Mike, I want to make it really clear to other members of the council and any members of the public who are listening that I'm very much in favor of accepting your most recent risk assessment recommendation. I'm fully in support of that. If we were to, you know, vote on a resolution for COVID protocols for our buildings today and for the next month, I would be very much in support of continuing what we're doing now. So having said that, before we completely leave the subject, I'll ask you to give me a couple of minutes to summarize for you guys and any listening public some recent efforts toward some compromise between on this very controversial subject in the community. Thanks.
Excellent. Please, delighted to hear your thoughts on that. But Louis, did you want to add those comments now?
Sure. If this is a good time, I'll try to be brief, everybody. If your level of COVID fatigue is anywhere close to mine, you're not going to want to hear this for very long either. But many of you are aware of a letter that Greg Streveler wrote a couple of weeks ago, seeking some sort of compromise on the whole masking issue in Gustavus in public buildings. And his idea was, is there something that we can all agree on that would not provide any risk to patrons or employees' health and safety, but sort of demonstrate some give and look subsequently to similar compromise actions on the quote, the other side, you know, perhaps that they might be termed the anti-masking or mask optional side with regard to this controversy. And one of the very early objections I heard to the proposal that Greg put forward was that it, the way it was described, it would change the hours on Saturday from mask only to mask optional. And one of the objections was that, well, that reduces services to those members of the community who would prefer that inside use of the library be mask only. So then I thought, well, I wonder if we could address that objection by providing some additive hours after those regular hours on Saturday for mask optional. And of course, this all requires that, you know, that there would be a one or more volunteers and maybe even one of the employees that could train the volunteers to do the bare minimum of management of the library during those hours and all of the details that go along with that. Of course, the, you know, devil's in the details, but my presumption in moving forward was that we could address all of those So I started this conversation with Mayor and Joe Van der Zanden. I didn't really include Greg in the conversation, but it was really just those two council members and myself, because we're limited by the Open Meetings Act of how widely we can spread a discussion like this. And I then spoke, Tom, the city administrator, was kind enough to give me actually a couple of hours of his time the middle of last week to talk about this and to see whether he could approach our paid library employees before we get too far down this path, to just see if they see how comfortable they would be with that idea. It turns out they're not very comfortable with the idea. I don't think that it's because they don't believe that it highly, highly, highly unlikely to provide any risk to the health and safety of the public and library workers, but rather that they just feel terrible if someone contracted COVID during that time in a city space. They're not comfortable with that. And I'm kind of at the point that many of the rest of you are. I wanted us to try as hard as we could up to a point to see if there's a place where we can all see daylight to kind of come together somehow on this. I'm not seeing any daylight, unfortunately. And I've kind of agreed to just kind of step away with this. I'm not going to push any harder. But I wanted everybody to know that some attempts were being made, not to assume that the city is not trying to find ways around this in the interim before we can relax our COVID protocols for regular hours. And I'll just leave it at that. And if anyone else would like to comment, fine. But just wanted that to go on the record. Thanks.
Thank you, Lewis. That's a very important perspective. And it's something that it's got to be in our possible toolkit going forward. Do any other council members have any other feelings they'd like to express on this? I have to say, I realize it's not always a comfortable thing to discuss. So, I wanted to add a couple other things too from my study of this. I follow this stuff pretty carefully and tune into the state echoes every Wednesday and so forth. One thing that I've come to appreciate recently is that as the pandemic trends towards a situation where the virus is endemic in the population, we're assuming it's not going to disappear. It's not going to be, we're not going to get rid of it like smallpox. But it's likely going to be with us for the duration, but at a level that is endemic in the population where it causes some low level but continuous and predictable caseload, level of disease in the populations. And that'll vary somewhat from one population to another, depending on so many other factors like public health conditions in that particular country or community. But that doesn't mean that it is not still dangerous for some folks. And so there's no sharp line here. It's just a kind of a tail that gets thinner as we go on, but is always there. And one public health expert suggested that, or noted that masking is a two-way means of reducing transmission in a population. It reduces the outgoing delivery of virus from an infected person, and for those people who are not infected, their mask is a barrier to reduce their potential for inhaling that virus. So it's a two-way control. And at some point when the population is largely or has a large degree of immunity from vaccination or prior disease, then we get to some place where there will still be some people who are particularly vulnerable and will need to be protected due to age, other health conditions, compromised immune systems, and so forth. And at that point, maybe it's reasonable to go to a one-way masking control where the people who are particularly at risk would have to wear a high quality, or would choose presumably to reduce their risk by wearing a high quality mask, such as an N95 or a KN95. And the rest of us would not. We may be approaching that situation, and perhaps we may, as we approach that, maybe applying it during a short period of time, such as on Saturday, as late in the day, like Greg has suggested, and Lewis has described, maybe a step in that direction. So those are things that I'll be looking at as opportunities next month when I do another risk assessment for you. And we'll just need to keep all those possibilities as possible tools in our toolkit. And I'll also be reviewing it with staff. It's really important to me that the staff feels comfortable in their jobs and confident that they can, and volunteers and public members of the public can use the facilities and feel confident that they're not going to be put at additional risk there. So those would be all things that I'll be considering as we look at this again next month. So one last opportunity for comment from anybody. Okay. Just briefly, I think you all know where we are on roads. Roads necking down, but we've finished up a plowing that took extra long this last time because the snow was heavy, and there's just so little room left to plow the snow with the standard plowing equipment. But Glacier Bay Construction kind of finished that up today, and then they've started moving out berms where it looks like they can do so with either with the perhaps with the blade on the grader or even a loader if necessary. They're trying to clear intersections for sight distance, and we're not going to be able to get the roads back to full width very easily, but I noticed they did Tong Road some point this afternoon, and it was to where I think I could have passed somebody coming the other way on it, which was an improvement. And I hope down in your area too, Vice Mayor, maybe they got to those yet. Or they okay, they're trying to get it as wide as we can. We are facing another atmospheric river, this time rain. It looks like Wednesday and Thursday. There's a warning out on that today. We'll be watching for an overflow into the gravel pits. My hope is that there's still enough snow in those overflows that it'll slow it down like it did a couple of weeks ago, and it'll just be sort of metered into the pits when it overflows, and the Eastside Airport ditch can handle it. So that's our hope, but we'll be keeping an eye on that to make sure we don't get another flood on Wilson Road or something. Any questions about roads before we ended up here for the evening? Or anything else that you'd like to bring up? It's a work session, and so we can talk about anything that you would like. Well, looks like everybody's probably had enough. So we've been 2 hours, and I guess we'll close it off for tonight. We'll see you all next Monday night, and it would be nice to have some more of you here in the council chambers with us. It's always nice to have you across the table from us. So good night, everybody, and thanks to the public who tuned in.
Good night. Thank you.
Okay. Well, that risk assessment thing.